The year is 2020, the number. Another summer, get down. Sound of the funky drummer. Music hitting the hard cause. I know you got soul.
The information age got him seeing what's really wrong with these racist days. I honor the strong and pity the weak. Your thoughts run your life, be careful what you think. Haiti beat France in century 17. Salute Toussaint and Dessalines. And I do love France, know what I mean? It's a system I'm talking, nobody's agreeing. They say it's suicide when dead bodies are swinging. Cowards are hunting black men, that's what I'm seeing. How many toasters have been burnt down? And once Central Park was a thriving black town. Yo, Chuck, I'm fighting the power right now. Thanks to you, Flav and P.E. putting it down. Putting your life on the line so I can rap now. The next generation still singing, fight the power.
Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power.
Police think they Wayne, 6ix9ine over the law. Yeah. Wanna give a short stick, but we really need a long. To the boys in the hood, ducking bullets and batons. From boys in the hood, triple K's on the arm. Four fingers on my palm, screaming fight, fight. Change the policy, defund, buy back our property. Yeah. You love Black Panther, but not Fred Hampton. Yeah. Word to the Howards and the Aggies and the Hamptons. Yeah. They book us, won't book us, I'm Booker. T. Washington, George Kill, 420. Think about it, think. That's 2,000 pennies. Yeah. The value black life, the cost of going to Wendy's for a four-quarter burger. Ended in murder. Now. Fight for Brianna and the pain of her mama. Gotta fight.
Fight the power. 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 We got to fight the power.
Yeah, generations is how long we've been at war. The revolution on our platform. You break a man's mind and it's back. Your solidarity is what I'm wearing all black for. For comrades who don't fought without me, it's not to try and change our thoughts about me or to redirect your reports about me. Dear white people, you should take a course about me. Cause is it the long, long and four finger ring? The sciences of the arts, the songs we can sing. I really wanna know why y'all so scared. Probably cause the promised land, we almost there. But look, I think of images that fuel my youth. Interviews by Craig Hodges and Abdul Raouf. Examples like Olympic black power salutes and Panther troops. I saw as I pursued my truth. If racism is a cancer, black thoughts the answer. Gotta get up off the back porch. Emancipate your mind, get your bodies back from ransom. And all black hands up for the anthem.
Fight the power. Fight the power.
Yo, yo, check this out, man.
Bring that beat back, man.
Bring that beat back.
Two, three, four, hit it.
People stronger than this evil, smashing your power structure, melanin royal regal. System designed to kill and unprotect. Worldwide hit the streets just to get some respect. Our fight and our rights for freedom will never waver. Justice Breonna Taylor, salute Chuck and Flavor. Still the same anger since Radio Raheem died. Black power to the people, push forward pride.
Fighting power like it's an octo. Born to fight, I made it off the block though. Thought he had a gun and he was black, that's the combo. The police killed George having a convo. They killed Malcolm X, they killed Dr. King. They gave us guns and dope, they wanna stop our kings. Trying to erase our history, stop and think. History class ain't tell us about Juneteenth. Cops don't give a damn about a Negro. Pull a trigger, kill a Negro, he's a key, bro. Living life on welfare. The last one who cared was Obamacare, round 12. Nose kinda bloody, gotta keep fighting. Trump through the North Korea, they respect violence. If you ain't trying to have your city on fire, put some respect on our name. We come from gold and diamonds.
Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power. We got to fight the powers that be. Elvis was a hero of the month, but he never meant to me. You see, straight up racist, the sucker was simple and plain. Cause I'm black and I'm proud, I'm ready, I'm hyper, some amp. Most of my heroes on a piano stamp. Sample all look like you look and find nothing but redneck for 400 years if you check.
Don't worry, be happy.
Was a number one jam. Demo by Santa to slap me right here. Get it.
Let's get this party started right.
Right on, come on. What we got to say? Yeah. All of the people know the lay. Make everybody see. In order to fight the powers that be.
Welcome to the Peace and Social Justice Program for Friday, July the 16th, 2021. I am your host, Robert Jones. Today on the program, we will be discussing the recent preliminary injunction that was ordered against the city of Chico on behalf of 8 homeless residents. The suit was brought by the Legal Services of Northern California, who issued the following press release. Last week, U.S. District Court Judge Morrison England of the U.S. District Court of the Eastern District of California issued a preliminary injunction barring the city of Chico from citing or arresting homeless residents for sleeping or resting outdoors while sufficient shelter is not available. In his order, Judge England wrote, quote, since Chico's ordinances prohibit homeless persons from resting on all public property and there is not enough practically available shelter within the city, the city cannot resort to arresting people or imposing criminal penalties like fines on homeless persons in violation. The Legal Services of Northern California filed a suit in April on behalf of 8 unhoused Chico residents, alleging Chico's enforcement of the anti-camping ordinances against unhoused residents was unconstitutional. Judge England issued a temporary restraining order on April 11th and extended it twice as the parties tried to negotiate a resolution of the matter. When negotiations between plaintiffs and the city of Chico stalled, the parties appeared for the hearing on plaintiffs' preliminary injunction motion on Friday, July the 2nd. And there, Judge England extended the temporary restraining order following the hearing, pending his decision on the motion. Prior to the July 2nd hearing, the city of Chico announced it would permit unhoused people to camp at a remote, barren plot of land adjacent to the city's airport, located more than 3 miles from stores and services and inaccessible after dark. The city then argued to the court that the airport site was a, quote, shelter, so that there was sufficient shelter available for all unhoused people and that the city's enforcement of camping ordinances was, in fact, permissible. Judge England examined various definitions of shelter and soundly rejected the city's assertion in his order, writing, quote, under none of these definitions is the airport site a shelter. It is an asphalt tarmac with no roof and no walls, no water and no electricity. It is an open space with what amounts to a large umbrella for some shade. It affords no real cover or protection to anyone. So there you have the summary of the preliminary injunction that was passed by Judge England against the city of Chico. On today's program, we'll be doing a deep dive into this preliminary injunction. My first guest is going to be Corey Turner, who is an attorney with Legal Services of Northern California. And we're going to discuss some of the particulars of the preliminary injunction. We'll follow that with a much deeper dive into the history and the current situation with the temporary injunction with members of Chico Friends on the Street. It's a jam-packed show, so let's get to our interview with Corey Turner. Corey Turner, welcome to the Peace and Social Justice Program.
Thank you very much for having me, Robert. I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on. So this seems like a monumental little injunction, but there are some things in here that some of the homeless advocacy groups in Chico have been talking about for a long time, namely whether or not these ordinances are constitutional. And it looks like, according to Judge England, they're not. But the first thing I just wanted to ask you, just for listeners who don't know, what is a preliminary injunction?
So first, I want to say that I am proud to be part of a fantastic team of attorneys over at Legal Services in Northern California, and with our co-counsel from Western Center on Law and Poverty, and the attorneys on the case that are listed are from Western Center, Alex Prieto and Robert Newman, as well as from Legal Services, myself, Stephen Goldberg, our regional counsel for public benefits, and our lead counsel, Sarah Steinheimer, our regional counsel for housing, who has been just fantastic. Now, as to your question, well, a preliminary injunction stops a party from acting in a certain way until the court can decide if that action is legal or not. So in this case, we asked for a first a temporary restraining order, which was granted back in April. And the a temporary restraining order can be granted without any sort of hearing from the other side. It's just a way to press pause on everything for a short period to make sure that just in case there is, if there is a, if there appears to be some sort of illegal activity that is continuing, that it can at least stop while the court can then have a chance to hear evidence from both sides. So in our case, we submitted an application for a temporary restraining order. We presented evidence that we believe showed that the city was acting unconstitutionally. It was enough that Judge England believed that we had demonstrated that there was at least some likelihood that that sort of activity was going on, and that it would not be very burdensome on the city to, at minimum, hit pause for 2 weeks, and then have us come together, give us a chance to present our side of the case, give the city a chance to present theirs, and then he would decide if there was going to be something longer, which is a preliminary injunction, which is much longer term. To issue a preliminary injunction, the judge had to find that we had a likelihood of succeeding if the case went on to trial. And that's the big difference. A temporary restraining order is a short pause to make sure that activity doesn't go on for too long. And it's nice and short because the other side typically hasn't had a chance to weigh in on it. And the judge decides that it's not going to hurt the other side to hit pause for a very brief period while waiting to hear both sides. But then a preliminary injunction happens after the judge hears from both sides. Now, we had a hearing back in April. We agreed to postpone for settlement negotiations multiple times. So the judge just the parties agreed, and the judge extended the TRO, you know, in, you know, 2-3 week intervals as we were going along. And then, unfortunately, negotiations stalled. The city went forward with their unilateral plan to make the airport site barren asphalt with very little shade or protection from the elements, to make that the one place in the city where they would not enforce their anti-camping ordinances, their property storage ordinances. And because that was not something that we could agree to, and the city would not move off of that, we were then forced to go back to the judge, continue the preliminary injunction hearing with new briefing and new arguments on July 2nd. After the judge heard those arguments, he ruled that because we had shown a likelihood of success, a likelihood that the city was in fact violating the Constitution, then the judge ruled that from now until there is a final judgment in the trial, or until he hears something that makes him issue a new ruling, that the city cannot enforce the ordinances that are listed in their illegal encampment notifications that they had been giving to folks in these sweeps that started back in January. Those are property storage ordinances, camping ordinances, camping or storing property near waterways. So the judge said that because the city was not providing shelter or allowing adequate shelter or adequate places for people to be, and that the airport site was in no way shelter under the Martin versus Boise decision, that the city could not enforce their ordinances moving forward because it was likely that they were unconstitutional, the way that the city was enforcing them.
Well, so Corey Turner, I want to clarify something that you said. The judge's injunction does not apply to the sit-lie?
So our temporary restraining order that we originally brought forward was based on the illegal encampment notifications that were being used, the 72-hour notices that were being used by the city to sweep people out of the encampments where they were forced to sleep because of the lack of affordable housing in the city of Chico. And of course, the lack of affordable housing is not unique to the city of Chico. It's not unique to California, nor is it unique to the United States. However, this level of criminalization is a direction that the city is going that is not in line with the Constitution and with the way other cities are reacting to this crisis. Because this preliminary injunction was about stopping the sweeps, it is about the ordinances that are listed in the notices that provide the justification for the sweeps. The municipal code regulations and sections that are listed in the notice are the prohibitions against camping in parks, the prohibitions against camping citywide, against property storage citywide, against camping and property storage in waterways. Those are what are enjoined by the preliminary injunction.
Well, gee, is there anything else you wanted our listeners to know about the case, or if people are interested, how they can maybe support you or look further into this?
What I can say is we're glad that our clients and that people who are experiencing unsheltered homelessness in Chico will not be forced to choose between going to the airport site in extreme heat or facing arrest. And the judge's order in his preliminary injunction decision made that possible. Now we encourage the city to engage in a real settlement process where we work together toward real evidence-based solutions that will make our community as a whole healthier and safer and serves the needs of all our community members.
Well, Corey Turner, thank you for the tremendous work you've been doing. And I'm sure many of our listeners will be keeping an eye on the next stage of this saga as it plays out. But thanks for your time, and thanks for joining me on the Peace and Social Justice Program.
Thank you very much, Robert. I appreciate it. Thank you for your time as well.
That was Corey Turner from Legal Services of Northern California. I'd like to do more of a deep dive now and go into a little bit deeper into the injunction and give a little bit of history and talk about what this means for the city and the future. I have Chico Friends on the Street, the founder, Mr. Patrick Newman, and another member, Cicery Sherry. I'm wondering, Patrick Newman, if you might be able to give us a little, maybe background, a little history on what led up to this situation where there had to be a lawsuit that was presented against the city of Chico.
Sure. I think to put that lawsuit in context, it's helpful to spend a few minutes just sort of going over the history of the relationship between our city and our citizens with the poorest people, what we call the homeless, which is really just a kind of visible poverty on the streets. Homelessness wasn't a big deal in Chico 10 years ago. We didn't talk about it much. And then we entered a period where it seemed like there was exponentially more people on the streets, and they were very visible, and this created a kind of awareness and concern on the part of a lot of people, especially the downtown business community, landlords and people that have a vested interest in the commercial life of the downtown, because we saw more and more people down there. 2013, the first thing I noticed about this culture that's developed was that a couple of business people with money in the downtown and a city councilor got together and decided to push a church group that had been serving meals on the city plaza every Sunday evening for about 10 years. They decided to push them off the plaza, along with Food Not Bombs that also had a program on Saturdays. So the idea there was that this is too visible. We don't want to see this anymore. Let's start trying to force this out of the public eye. So in 2013, this church group, the Orchard Church, was pushed into filing for a use permit, permit to have an event, and they couldn't afford it. And so there was a deal made where they could keep serving food, but they had to move off the plaza. behind the municipal building where no one can see where they are. Anyway, I would watch that group. I didn't join that group. I wasn't particularly interested in doing what they were doing, but I really admired them. And I loved seeing what they were doing. So because I noticed that they were really like meeting people in the public space and learning their names. And there was a lot of affection there and it seemed like a beautiful thing. So I developed a kind of emotional attachment to it, which is an interesting part of this, at least in my own process, where something emotional, something that had feeling associated with it got violated. It's like something there that I treasured and thought this is a jewel of Chico was taken away or pushed aside. So when that happened, that hooked me into this thing and it's led to a lot of other kinds of involvement. But anyway, just as a place to begin. So then we go through a whole bunch of watersheds, which are some of which are listed on our blog, ChicoFriendsOnTheStreet.org. And those watersheds, you know, if you go through them all one by one by one, it takes a while, but let's just jump through some of the big ones. So what happened also in 2013 is that we had our first sit-lie ordinance that passed, and that was a very limited, almost you could say symbolic ordinance, because in addition to not blocking sidewalks and not blocking doorways, there was another sit-lie ordinance that was added to our codes that said that people just can't sit anywhere on a sidewalk, whether they're blocking a doorway or the street or whatever. You're just not allowed to sit there. So that was passed in 2013. And then in 2015, we had a really big, huge watershed that happened. And that was the passage of the Offenses Against Public Property Ordinance. And there was two phases to that. 2015, there was the first part. 2016, there was an expansion. Looking at the first part, which includes a lot of statutes, a lot of laws that make just the sit-lie law look like a tiny little detail, because it talks about storage, it has all kinds of curfews, it has limitations on people's right to be in the public space, and goes from just infractions to criminal penalties. So that there's a whole bunch of laws now that if you violate these laws, you can not only be cited, but you can be arrested for these laws because they're also they're infraction or misdemeanor. It's a really important point because it used to be that something like consuming alcohol in public or smoking or these kinds of things were just infractions. Under this new law, these all became infraction or misdemeanor. They all became arrestable offenses. And when that was sold in 2015 by Lieutenant Britt from the Chico PD, he did multiple presentations. He actually said that they need these laws, they need these tools. And one of the things that he pointed out was that if you can't catch people sleeping, you can't arrest them for camping. So they put all these curfews in so that you don't have to catch someone for sleeping. You can just catch them in the wrong part of town at a certain time of day, and you can arrest them for simply being there. So there's curfews on our waterways. There's curfews on like the Chico Municipal Center. So that after 10 o'clock, if you're over that line into that block around City Hall, you can actually be arrested for that. I mean, in general, the idea with criminalization of homelessness is to hook people who are on the streets into the criminal justice system as a way of managing them, as a way of controlling their behaviors, as a way of intimidating them, as a way of marginalizing them. So the more you can intensify that enforcement in multiple different ways, the more you can apply this kind of pressure to people on the streets. Parenthetically, the voice of Sean Morgan has to come in here because he said many times that he believes that people should simply be, you know, moved out of Chico to somewhere else. And one of the ways you do that is you just make things so inhospitable on a legal level that people are sort of forced out. But what we do, let's just put it in practical terms. What we do this three ways. We give people tickets for things like smoking or jaywalking or whatever if we don't want to arrest them. Most people on the streets get failure to appear warrants because most people on the streets are not very good at getting to court and handling the fines and all the other things that are involved when you get a citation. So you can cite people and you can ultimately arrest them anyway because that citation will not be addressed and then it'll turn into a failure to appear. And that's a misdemeanor. That's also an arrestable offense. So this is another avenue. But the making something like we did with all of our park codes, you know, like feeding a pigeon into a misdemeanor, what that does is it gives the police great leeway in terms of being able to simply arrest people on the spot whenever they think that it's useful in terms of enforcement. So if you can't get someone for camping or whatever other thing, you have multiple tools in your toolbox that you can use to arrest people, take them to Butte County Jail. What's the point of that? Well, Butte County Jail becomes a holding place for people on the streets. You can take people who you're finding to be the most difficult to manage, and you can get them out of circulation for a few days. You might be able to get them on something more serious and keep them there for months at a time, or possibly years, which I've seen with some people off the streets. So the point is to create a kind of like an array of tools. And so the more you open up possibilities for police officers and people in law enforcement to act on these codes, the more you can criminalize life on the streets, and that's seen as useful. So this gets into this whole question of like broken windows policing, all this stuff, which you can talk about too. But it's a general attempt to create an enforcement environment that is, in theory at least, is supposed to lead to less social crime in your city. It doesn't, but you know, that's the idea. So it's sort of an industry.
That is the voice of Mr. Patrick Newman. He is the founder of Chico Friends on the Street. We are here today on the Peace and Social Justice Program talking about the latest ruling against the city of Chico on behalf of the plaintiffs of homeless, a number of homeless plaintiffs here in town. So there was a rather dramatic ruling by the Eastern District Court of California, and we're going to get into some details of that in a moment. I also have via Zoom another local activist from Chico Friends on the Street, Cicely Sherry. But I do need to, before we get back into the conversation, I do need to let you know Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico Natural Foods Cooperative, offering a variety of organic and local produce, organic groceries, and supplements. The co-op has hot food, ready-to-eat sandwiches, and cold brew coffee. The co-op now accepts online orders for curbside pickup. Chico Natural Foods Co-op open every day on the corner of 8th and Main in downtown Chico. And by Chico Velo, supporting bicycling, education, and advocacy since 1980, Chico Velo encourages you to ride your bicycle and park it safely at their bike valet, when available, at the Thursday night market and the Saturday farmers market. For more information, visit Chico Velo, that's Chico V-E-L-O, chicovelo.org, or just find them over on Facebook. So thanks to our underwriters for supporting community radio, and in particular, this program, Peace and Social Justice. If you just tuned in, we are discussing the recent ruling against the city of Chico on behalf of the unsheltered population here in Chico. Citing basically what the court cited is that the city of Chico is passing laws that are unconstitutional. To carry on this discussion with me, I have via Zoom Cicely Sherry, and here in the studio I have also a member of Chico Friends on the Street, Patrick Newman. Now, Patrick, before we took our little break, we were just clarifying a little bit of the history of the poverty criminalization laws that the city of Chico has implemented since, say, the past 10 years. Now, take us up, if you can, to the point at which we have a ruling against the city of Chico, if you will.
Okay, so that's such a huge watershed. I know it's a little tedious, but let me just stay with that for a minute longer, because I just want to point out that when that offenses against public properties raft of laws was passed, which Judge England clearly said was unconstitutional in many ways, especially the storage law and all these things that are in there. The night that was passed, September 15th of 2015, we had a 6-1 vote in favor of putting those laws on our books. We're talking about a situation where there was one counselor, Tammy Ritter, who voted against those laws. Three so-called liberals joined the three so-called conservatives in voting for that. So these are important things to consider when we think about who's responsible for all this and what we did as a community and what we allowed to happen here. So, okay, so that watershed, there was an expansion in 2016 of the offenses against public properties ordinance. Rolling forward, I mean, if we want to go jump over a bunch of stuff, we could go straight up to what's another watershed, and that's COVID-19, because a lot of what we're seeing today would never have happened if COVID hadn't happened. And so there's a night where Alex Brown takes the CDC recommendation for shelter in place and makes a motion to allow people in our cities to homeless people in our city to camp. And so that was a pretty big step in terms of the development of this story, because once we allowed people to shelter in place, we essentially, by policy but not law, legitimized people using our public spaces to camp. And so if you look at all the reasons why under the COVID recommendations that we did that, you know, try to understand that better. But at that point, camps were established all over town. There was a pretty big camp established in Bidwell Park over by 1 mile. There was a camp established at Windchime Park. Also, what is that? Humboldt Neighborhood Park. There was people began to camp on the Triangle. People began to camp at Comanche Creek. So we had four or five areas where there was concentrations, villages of tents. Rolling forward through the, you know, that was probably March or April of 2020. And then as things progressed, there was more and more public opposition to that kind of usage of those spaces. And the council reversed itself in August of 2020. And at that point, changed the policy and allowed the police to begin to move people along. It took until January of 2021 before the police actually started to break up the camps. And I think that was sort of an internal policy decision, and much changed with our council changing to in a much more conservative direction. Okay, so the reason that's important is because a whole lot of people who before COVID were not engaged in these human rights issues at all became engaged when they started noticing that their parks were taken over. And then the other thing is that they started noticing, or they acknowledged that when these sweeps started happening, that this was a clearly very violent thing to do to people in the middle of winter and in the midst of a pandemic, to start physically coming in with, you know, loaders and scraping away people's tents and throwing them in bins. Okay, so what you saw there was the sweep of the park, the camp in Bidwell Park, and next the sweep of the Triangle area, and then the next was the sweep of Windchime Park. Those all happened, and right the day before they were going to sweep Comanche, that's when we got the temporary restraining order, which was April 11th of 21. And at that point, you had the court engaged now. And that was because Legal Services of Northern California went to court and asked to get the temporary restraining order against doing yet another sweep. Cicero and I and a group of us were, you know, on the Triangle that was previous to one of the street sweeps for about 12 days, trying to stand with that camp. So we were physically present to those sweeps. And by the evening that Sunday before the Monday, when Comanche Creek, which is now occupied, was going to be swept, everybody was assuming that it was going to happen. And so while he's looking at these sweeps and saying, like, what, you know, what's going on here in Chico? He looks at the sweeps and he looks at the context, the legal context that they're happening. And he looks at all of our laws, not only just the offenses against public property laws from 2015, but a bunch of other laws that were put on the books, including the laws that were put on the books in the first session of the new council, which is December of 2020, when they took our entire, all of our park rules, and there's like 30 of them, and they turned all those into citations and misdemeanors. So under Chico law, you not only have all of those laws and the offenses against public property, but you also have the criminalization of things like feeding a pigeon, literally. That's on our books today. So without COVID and the sweeps, this story would be very different. So there's kind of a fluky nature to it all. It's like we've been drifting along for years, 5 years or so, with laws on our books that were clearly unconstitutional, but no one called them out. I mean, there was some of us who tried to engage, you know, some kind of legal process to get some action on that. And when I started Friends on the Street on the plaza every Sunday, it was kind of a response to not being able to get any litigation. It was like, so, you know, it's the beginning of 2016, a few months after the Offenses Against Public Property Ordinance passed. And it's like, wow, this is just totally disempowering. There's nobody who wants to take this up and go to court over it. So that was cooking for a long time. There was four or five years in there when we drifted along. And as a community, you know, we tolerated the existence of these laws. And there was very little said about them, except for a few of us who kept bringing it up. So that's kind of the, sorry, that's a long-winded thing, but that's the sweep of it. And that takes us to today with the, you know, these decisions that we have in our hands now from Judge England, looking at all of that and looking at the unconstitutionality of our laws, which he's called out very clearly, and looking at the fact that the city of Chico has been obstructive in terms of producing shelter options for people on the streets. So there's a double whammy there. There's a combination. There's lack of shelter and there's criminalization laws. And those two things are both involved in all this this legal process right now.
That's the voice of Patrick Newman of Chico Friends on the Street. And I want to get into some of the details of that. But I want to turn to Cicery. Can you talk a little bit about your experience with the unsheltered and how you became involved in it?
Well, I was originally got involved just by meeting Patrick and him telling me all about it and inviting me to participate. And eventually I did. I went down to the plaza and I don't remember what I brought, but distributed some things and got out pretty quick because I was pretty shy. But with Patrick's encouragement, I kept going back.
And just to clarify, when you speak about going down to the plaza, Patrick, Chico Friends on the Street, distributes supplies to the unsheltered every Sunday at noon. People can go to the plaza and contribute, talk to people, learn about people's stories, just interact with people who are living on the street.
Yeah, so that's kind of an important point, too. Like, what the hell's going on with us being there? Well, if I look at January 2016 and why that was the response to feeling totally disempowered when these laws were passed, it was meant as a way of a whole bunch of different things all at once embedded in that. So noon Sunday, we're bringing all the food that we can come up with that's going to be useful to people, and then clothing and toiletries. And in the winter, as much clothing and tarps and sleeping bags and stuff as we can get together. We're always on a shoestring budget, so this is not a very popular thing we're doing. But why? Okay, so as a way of responding to the city and its criminalization practices and its culture of violence, the best thing I could think of to do was to stand in the public space with people and say, hey, you have a right to be here. I affirm your existence. I'm here to learn about what you live every day. I'm here to stand with you. I'm here to stand with you in your right to be here. And then to, as much as possible, subvert the culture of deprivation, which means, like, if you use deprivation to control people, which is, there's a history of this with people that are poor, you're basically undermining their civil liberties and their human rights. So when we give stuff to people, quotes, we're not just doing charity there. We're actually trying to move the needle on justice there, because it's a protest and it's an undermining of the whole engineered deprivation approach to poverty. So there's a lot of facets to that sandwich in the plaza that's, you know, people don't understand very well, but takes a little time to understand how that's a multifaceted thing.
And Cicery, Sherry, with regard to that issue, you mentioned just a few minutes ago that the way that you came first to participate with Chico Friends on the Street is in having these conversations with Patrick. And I'm wondering if you could say something about what brought you to that kind of understanding. I mean, many people in my experience here in Chico have a sense of wanting to contribute to some kind of charitable donation or something like that to the unhoused population. But this other aspect of the rights of individuals to exist in the public space, talk a little bit Cicery, if you will, about that aspect that drew you to contribute to Chico Friends on the Street.
Yeah, the aspect of human rights definitely makes it a different experience. You know, otherwise it would be just the same as writing a check. But I find it really, really motivating to get to know people and become friends with them. I feel invested in their lives a little bit and wanting to support them in whatever they need to do to make their situation better or to just survive.
That's the voice of Cicery Sherry, a local activist here in Chico. And in the studio, I have with me Patrick Newman, the founder of Chico Friends on the Street. My name is Robert. You are tuned into the Peace and Social Justice program right here on 90.1 FM KZFR here in Chico. I think that the pandemic, in a twisted way, it helped the average person see the plight of the unhoused in Chico a little bit differently. Maybe it shone a light on something maybe they hadn't been able to see before.
This is sort of an esoteric point, but I think it's an important one. Going to the plaza every Sunday, and now I hope Cicery gets a chance to talk about this, and I know she will here in a minute, but and also Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It's not a small thing to go into the public space and just simply be with people who are living there. One of the things that it does, I think, and I wish more people would do it, including everyone on the council right now, is to spend more time getting to know people and just living, just being with them even for a minute and experiencing what that's like. Because what it does is it keeps a flame burning, which is this kind of like this question of these laws and whether or not anybody, like there was 20 people who spoke against the offenses against public property ordinance that night in 2015. There was about 20 that spoke for it too. Some surprising figures among them.
You mean at the city council?
At the city council meeting, yeah. But I talked to people after that, and a lot of them, it seemed like they were kind of saying, well, it's on the books now. Let's just see how it goes. Maybe they'll use the tools, blah, 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 well. But these are people who opposed it. The number of people is close to zero who actually saw that happen, felt a sense of outrage about it, saw that it was unconstitutional, and then lived in that space of being uncomfortable and, I guess, motivated to try to keep that conversation going. Well, one of the ways that you keep that conversation going, at least I feel like I do in internally, is to keep my finger on the pulse of this so that it's like when you watch people suffer and you let that in, it alters something and it creates a context that can't be kept. You can't keep that context any other way. It's just it floats off into being an abstraction. So that is part of, I think, why over these 5 years there has been a kind of nagging voice that says, keep talking about this, because it's in the context of watching people die. And watching people die creates a kind of imperative that doesn't come through any other way. I think it's fundamental. It's like in any other arena where there's suffering, if the suffering is an abstraction, then the way that suffering is promulgated is also an abstraction. And there's far less investment in what's happening.
You're listening to the Peace and Social Justice program on KZFR. And we have in the studio here Patrick Newman, who is the founder of Chico Friends on the Street. And via Zoom, we have Cicery Sherry, also a homeless volunteer. You mentioned, Patrick Newman, the criminalization laws. All these things, it was a simultaneous happening of COVID, of an awareness, and then the awareness, a reaction against that. So, yeah, I was wondering if you just speak to that.
There was, okay, one example that would be there was a lot of people in at 1 Mile the morning that the final sweep happened, when this dramatic thing where they bring in the loader and everything else, and they're grabbing people's stuff and just throwing them into a garbage bin. I saw people there that I had never seen before. I saw people there who have no history of speaking up about this kind of these kinds of social justice issues, human rights issues with respect to the homeless. So that's a tangible experience. When you go and you stand there and you watch somebody's tent being demolished right before your eyes, you're in the public space. You're actually experiencing something real. It becomes far less abstract. And that, I think that does it's among other elements in this story, begin to feed people's awareness on another level. And there's a weird schizophrenic thing here, though, because when you look at the motivations of people, there's a lot of sort of like affluent white liberals who were driven to get involved in this subject because they saw their parks being taken over by homeless people. So on the one hand, they want to see themselves as virtuous liberals. And on the other hand, they're kind of like Sierra Club. I want a nice, clean environment kind of in, you know, where I go to the park and it all looks pristine and everything. Those created some really interesting currents, which I'm not going to get into in any depth. But there's a lot of complexity to how this affects culture. But yes, when I think the pandemic did create a kind of sense of crisis, and I think it did bring people into an awareness of how fragile things are, it changed the psychology of the city. Now, I'm not going to sit here and argue that it's changed it to the depth that I would like to see it change, or that people's motives are human rights oriented. I don't think human rights are well understood right across the board, but there's definitely a kind of these court decisions are evidence that something shifted, and enough to get, you know, a federal court to look at Chico. And that's a giant thing.
That's the voice of Patrick Newman, founder of Chico Friends on the Street. I'm also joined via Zoom by Cicery Sherry. We're discussing the latest ruling by the Eastern District Court of California, ruling against the city of Chico, against criminalization of homeless laws. But I need to let you know right now that the Peace and Social Justice Program is made possible by the generous contributions of KZF supporters and by the regional and continuing education at Chico State, offering online graduate test preparation courses for those seeking an advanced degree in a wide range of fields, including law and business. Sign up for a complimentary strategy session to help you prepare to take the GRE, the GMAT, the LSAT, all of those at rce.csuchico.edu. That's rce.csuchico.edu. And by Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, family owned, operated, and argued over since 1980, reminding listeners to think for themselves, but drink with others. So thank you to the underwriters for supporting community radio, as well as more specifically, the Peace and Social Justice Program. My name is Robert Jones. Today on the program, we are discussing the recent court decision against the city of Chico in favor of the unhoused plaintiffs, residents of Chico. I have in the studio Patrick Newman, founder of Chico Friends on the Street. And via Zoom, I have Cicery Sherry, who is also a local activist. Now, Cicery, I wanted you to talk a little bit about this program that you've really spearheaded, and it seems to be taking off. And that is the Monday, Wednesday, and Friday breakfasts in the plaza. If you could talk a little bit, not only about what it is and how people can get involved, but also who hatched this idea? How did you pull it off? I mean, this is no mean feat to provide breakfast for people in the plaza 3 days a week.
Sure. This program, the Monday, Wednesday, Friday breakfast program, was in response to the closing of the Jesus Center, the only no barrier source of food in the downtown area. So it's another subversion of the engineered deprivation of taking out the Jesus Center and saying, no, there is actually going to be food. Thank you very much. Not every day, unfortunately, but we can do that. So at 9 o'clock, we go out there. I bring coffee and muffins. Other people show up. Some people bring fruit. Some people bring eggs. Anyone's welcome to just show up, bring something, or don't.
And this is Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays at the plaza.
Correct.
People can just show up at 9 o'clock.
That's correct.
Bring whatever they want. Bring some breakfast. And Cicery, I want to circle back to something you said. I think it's really important. I was wondering if you could say more about what you called the engineered deprivation of the closing of the Jesus Center.
Well, it means they don't want homeless folks in the downtown area anymore, so they're cutting off all of the resources available. So I guess the philosophy is if there are no services there, then they'll go to wherever the services are, which of course is as far out of town as they can possibly get away with putting them.
Patrick Newman, this idea of sweeping homeless out of Chico, this is a concerted effort.
Yeah, it's intentional and it's premeditated. So that's another way of saying engineered. And so what the history there is kind of interesting. Robert Marbot, if people want to get a better handle on him, they should just read the Huffington Post article on Robert Marbot. It gives you a pretty good idea. So the Jesus Center actually brought Robert Marbot in as a consultant, which is pretty fascinating. And my understanding is that it costs more than $70,000 to do that. So there was a secret study that Robert Marbot did, which I just recently got a hold of, which I've always thought was probably influencing the city of Chico, and I still think that it is. And what happened there was Robert Marbot brought a whole bunch of recommendations to Chico. One of the recommendations was to get the service providers working more in concert with the city of Chico and developing their plans together. So shortly after Marbot was here, there was a memorandum of understanding generated between the city of Chico and the Jesus Center. And in that memorandum of understanding, the idea was to move the Jesus Center out to a consolidation facility closer to Costco out there. But in that process, there would be no soup kitchen, as Cicely said, no barrier source of food and clothing out there. So that was slated for removal, really, if people wanted to look at it, in 2017. And so it took a while to do it, but we're there now. That soup kitchen's gone. It's been transformed into a high barrier shelter in another location. That was all planned and executed with forethought and everything else. And here we go again. The vast majority of so-called liberals and progressives in Chico supported that move. There was I can count the number of people who objected on one hand. We should do some serious soul searching about what our culture is promoting and allowing here. Anyway, so what Cicely's doing is actually really heroic in the sense that trying to, get out there. Maybe it doesn't sound like a lot to people, but it is a lot to go to the plaza three times a week to make coffee for 30 people plus and try to start to generate a whole new program. It's a big deal, and she needs support, and I hope people support her. I try to when I can.
I need to let you know here that if you enjoy this program, just go to kzfr.org and tip this show.
There's one little area that I was thinking, it's sort of rolling back a minute, but I did want Cicely to have a chance to describe what she experienced in these sweeps, because she spent a lot of hours out there.
Sure. It was the saddest thing I've ever seen in person. Absolutely. It was really hard to keep it together, seeing people get evicted like that. It's like the most violent thing you can do to someone without actually touching them.
Yeah, well said.
Patrick, can you lead us up to exactly this particular decision? Because I think, as you mentioned, there was a temporary, this thing got off the ground with the courts in April, then there was a temporary restraining order, and then the decision was put off from April all the way until just recently, just last week. And what are the details leading up to this specific decision?
So as Cicely was just saying, those evictions happened three times, big ones. And well, there's four actually, if you count Boucher Street. But anyway, so the night before the last eviction of the largest camp happened, Judge England put the temporary restraining order through. So that's sometime Sunday evening before that Monday. The temporary restraining order stops everything, stops the city of Chico from proceeding. And he basically says in that you cannot evict these people from the public space anymore, temporarily, and you can't enforce these laws. And so there's storage laws and a few other laws that are on our books. Basically froze everything. At that point, everything's frozen. City, you have to maintain status quo. The city has to stop what they're doing. And then everybody's going to now take a look at what's going on, including the judge, right? So what happens then is a conversation that involves the judge, legal services in Northern California, and the city of Chico. And so that conversation, there's, you know, there's the transcripts of the court appearances, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And reading those is pretty interesting, actually. And what's happening there is that the judge is basically saying, hey, city of Chico and legal services, I'd really like to see you guys come to some kind of an agreement. So can you talk about this and find some kind of middle ground so that I don't have to step in here and make a ruling on behalf of the city of Chico that maybe the city of Chico ain't going to like too much. And so he's kind of hanging that over everyone's head and saying basically like, you guys try to find common ground. And in the last hearing, he actually brought up the idea of having a magistrate judge, his last name's Newman, I can't remember his first name, get involved in the process and try to act as a mediator and see if they can come to some sort of agreement. Having said that, the most recent thing is the preliminary injunction, which is now basically saying, look, this is not just a temporary restraining order anymore. This is a preliminary injunction. Everything's going to stay frozen until I see that you have responded, the judge. You've responded to my objections to what's happening in Chico. And that's where we are today. So we're now in a place where I think the city of Chico is going to have to make some sort of concessions. Up to now, they've been essentially playing hardball and refusing to negotiate in any sort of good faith way. And we could get into the whole thing about trying to put up this this camp out at the airport on a tarmac and offer that as an example of how they're going to comply with the judge's request, which utterly failed, and the judge saw through it. So we're kind of at square one in a way. It's like there hasn't really been, I mean, there's some negotiations that are happening this week. I'm not privy to any of that, so it's all in the black box. I don't know how much progress they're making. But again, it comes down to this thing, okay, given that the judge has, you know, enjoined the city of Chico at this point, now what kind of negotiation can happen and what sort of results might you get from that? And that's going to affect the laws and it's going to affect what kind of shelter alternatives the city of Chico is delivering. So that's where we are today. That negotiation is, you know, happening now.
That's the voice of Patrick Newman. He is the founder of Chico Friends on the Street. He is joining me here in the studio on the Peace and Social Justice Program. My name is Robert Jones. We also have via Zoom another local activist, Cicery Sherry, and we're talking about this latest preliminary injunction that came down from the court, which pretty much ruled against the city of Chico and their criminalization of poverty laws. I wanted to look, you know, I actually have a copy in front of me of the preliminary injunction, and I made some notes, and I wanted to just run some of this by both of you, Patrick and Cicery. I wanted to just read some of the things that the judge wrote. He does quote a preliminary injunction, he says, is a, quote, extraordinary and drastic remedy, right? So he says the purpose of a preliminary injunction is to preserve the status quo between the parties pending a resolution on the merits. So this preliminary injunction, as Patrick Newman, as you pointed out, there were weeks from April of this year all the way until the judgment, there were weeks when the legal team and the city went back and forth and couldn't quite, you know, come up with a resolution. And so the judge had to rule as a preliminary injunction. One of the things that I think is really interesting to point out from the preliminary injunction that Judge England makes explicit is that he says a plaintiff seeking a preliminary injunction must establish four things. One is that he is likely to succeed on the merits and he is likely to suffer irreparable harm in the absence of the preliminary relief. The equities tip in his favor and an injunction is in the public interest. The judge seems to be saying, if I'm reading this correctly, that for him to issue a preliminary injunction, the implication is that the decision is likely to succeed to come down on their side. So this is not a small feat. And Patrick Newman, as we talked about for years, you have been talking about the violation that the sit lie laws have been a part of, the violation of the Constitution. And he does actually, the Judge England, in his preliminary injunction, mentions that the city of Chico has placed ordinances that make it unlawful for people to sit, to lie, to stand, to sleep on any public property. And he makes a reference specifically to the Eighth Amendment. For those of you who don't know the Eighth Amendment, it's pretty succinct. It just says, excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. So Judge England is pointing out, and it's not just, he does mention some other, the Fourth and Fourteenth Amendments, but he mentions specifically that these sit-lie ordinances that Chico has instituted are violating the Eighth Amendment. And going back to you, Patrick Newman, for years I have heard you on these airways as well as in print and spoken to you about the unconstitutionality of the sit-lie ordinances and their relation to human rights and the rights of people to exist in the public space. Now, I mean, you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I do think that this is a bit of a vindication on behalf of you and folks like you who agree with these views of the sit-lie ordinances being unconstitutional. I'm wondering if you can just maybe respond or react to the fact that you have a judge here who is also a Bush appointee who concurs with what you have been saying now for a number of years.
Well, I mean, it's the fact that these laws are so egregious that a Bush appointee would look at them and say, look at, I mean, if you look at the court hearings and go through the dialogue, you know, the transcripts, it's pretty interesting things that have been said along the way here. But the judge has also said that the citizens of Chico have been led to believe things that aren't true, and that about what their responsibility is in terms of having, you know, this kind of poverty in our community. And so there's been a kind of, I think a lot of the anger that I feel is really about people that are on my side of the aisle in all this, you know, in terms of political philosophy or politics or party or all these other kinds of things. Because, like I said to somebody today, it's pretty ironic that a Bush appointee is telling the city of Chico, including our so-called liberals, that the laws that they enacted in 2015 are unconstitutional. It's like, that's a 6-1 majority that voted for that. So there's really a sort of calling out of the whole culture of Chico here that ought to go deep. And I wrote a letter about this saying that I think there just ought to be a lot of shame on my own part included, because none of us have really responded the way that we should to this. It's like, I don't know what kind of reckoning it takes to get people to really think through what their culpability is in something like this. But it's not like there's a kind of cover story, I guess, that goes with this, that, oh yes, well, we all care about human rights, and, you know, there's a kind of sentiment there. But when you look at the nitty gritty of how this went down, including things like, I mean, if you get a little bit outside the lines of this, just the struggle to get a few 24-hour toilets in this town, there were very, very, very few people who stepped up on that. I mean, very few. And talk about cruel and unusual punishment. I mean, we have laws that now make, you know, public urination and defecation like not only an infraction, but also a possible misdemeanor charge in a city that had no public toilets. And now they're actually removing the 24-hour toilets that we fought for. So we're not out of the woods on this. And this judge can't cure Chico. I think the judge has given us cause to really look at our whole culture of violence toward these people. And I hope it's not as prevalent everywhere, but the fact of the matter is that in this Chico, in this city of Chico, there's either been outright enthusiasm for this kind of criminalization and treatment, or there's been a hell of a lot of apathy and just kind of going along and ignoring it. And so I guess there's a kind of vindication in it, but I also don't feel like somehow this is going to cure us. I think it's only a wake up call. It's like a doctor giving us a diagnosis and saying, look, you have a serious pathological condition in your community, and you need to look at it.
That's the voice of Patrick Newman of Chico Friends on the Street. Cicely, Sherry, I want to go to you. When you got news of the ruling of Judge England, given all the time and dedication and effort that you have and are continuing to put into this issue, particularly the human rights issue, the right for people to occupy the public space, what kind of reaction did you have? What are your thoughts about it? What were your feelings about it?
It was certainly a relief. It was kind of getting to the point where Comanche Creek, was kind of this last, and it's not the only last stand. I suppose it's the biggest last stand after all of the other areas were swept. And it was kind of like, well, at this point, really, we've got 150 to 200 people. Where are they going to go? And I just imagine the streets being lined with people just sleeping on the sidewalks. So it was a huge relief when that happened. Of course, it's not really a solution. The only real solution is housing, but at least people can get a moment's peace.
I wanted to talk about one other thing that I find, it floored me when I saw this and I read the transcripts as well. The judge relied on a case called Martin versus City of Boise from 2019. And in that ruling, in the Martin ruling, the result is that homeless individuals are subject to criminal prosecution unless there is enough practically available shelter within the city for all unhoused individuals. So it's important to understand the reasoning behind the decision, and that is that if you are homeless and there are sit-lie laws in place, you are subject to prosecution unless, and this is a big unless there isn't enough shelter involved. So if there is shelter available, then according to this Martin ruling from 2019 that the judge relied on, if there is enough shelter, then the city can prosecute on these sit-lie laws. Now, what I think is interesting is that when they had the back and forth, the city created this, quote, shelter place out by the airport. And the judge, in response to the city's response to producing a, quote, shelter, I have to say, in reading the decision, it's clear that the judge, he just couldn't believe the depths to which the city went to justify calling that a shelter. In fact, to quote from the city, their argument was that a shelter is, quote, a practically available space for persons who are unhoused to go on a given day that would enable a city to enforce its anti-camping, sit-lie, and so forth ordinances. So talk about bad faith. Let me just clarify what's going on. In order to meet the definition of, quote, shelter, the city of Chico, they defined a shelter as a place for unhoused people to go so that the sit-lie ordinances could be enforced. That's one of the most cynical things I've ever heard. So in other words, the definition for the city in with regard to a shelter, it's not about actually sheltering the individuals. It's about making a legal crack so that the sit-lie ordinances could be enforced and the people can be prosecuted. Now, I love that the judge, to quote the judge, he said, quote, that definition does not pass the straight face test. So what he's saying is the city of Chico cannot possibly keep a straight face in saying that that's what a shelter is. And of course, he goes on to say, look, these are the kinds of things that shelters are, right? And he even quotes the Black's Law Dictionary, which anyone who's even a law student knows that the Black's Law Dictionary is the sort of authority on these kinds of definitions. The Black's Law Dictionary defines shelter as, quote, a place of refuge providing safety from danger, attack, or observation. So the judge goes on to say, look, he says, quote, under none of these definitions is the airport site a shelter. It is an asphalt tarmac with no roof and no walls, no water, and no electricity. It is an open space with what amounts to a large umbrella for some shade. It affords no real cover or protection. So here we are in Chico, 112 degree weather, And in order to provide, quote, shelter for unhoused people living in poverty, the city sets up a tarmac with the explicit intention of doing so just to enforce the anti-homeless laws. And to see in writing a Bush-appointed judge call the city out for the cynical, bad faith actions, at least to me, I did feel a little sense of vindication, dare I say joy, at the fact that this was pointed out. But Patrick Newman, I was wondering if you can react to that.
Well, the problem here is that our elected leaders, that this is a manifestation of exactly what our elected leaders are saying that they want to do, and have been saying for a long time. So, like, for example, last October at a city council meeting, a bunch of homeless solutions were being proposed that night. It was sort of focused on that. And at that point, city manager Mark Orem proposed that same site out there. He proposed having a very similar operation put into place and as a solution. And when it came to a vote, whether the council was going to vote up or down on that, and this is the council we had between 2018 and 2020, and it's now different, but that night it was voted down. And it was voted down by, I think, almost everybody on the council, conservatives and so-called liberals alike. But why was it voted down by Sean Morgan? Sean Morgan asked the then city attorney, who is not the city attorney we have now, and I think he was a little more of a centrist in terms of these issues. He asked him point blank, can we enforce? You know, that was the word. Can we enforce if we put this thing out there? And the city attorney said, no, I don't think so. And then Sean Morgan said, then I can't vote for it. So this whole thing of enforcing the law and making criminalizing homelessness and making this making homelessness a criminal offense, being quite clear about wanting to push people out of town to another city, that's been said publicly too. We want to move them all to Oroville because that's a third world country. Making any kind of services about enforcement rather than just services. This is deep in the belief system and philosophy of our city at this point. And so former Mayor Morgan, who's now a council member, is still pretty much leading the city of Chico. And he has the staff that he wants and he has the attorney he wants. And so there's nothing surprising about this. What's interesting is that we have a federal judge saying, look, you guys are way outside the lines on all this. So we have to have federal oversight of what our council is doing and our city is doing, because it's become so far removed from what the mainstream common practices of other cities are. Those aren't good either, but this is even further removed. So there's nothing surprising in that what you've very articulately described as a cynical kind of direction of the city. We need to be really clear that they're not surprised by themselves in terms of like what they're saying they want. The judge is simply kicking it back to them and saying, look, this is what you guys are asking for in Chico.
That's the voice of Mr. Patrick Newman. He is the founder of Chico Friends on the Street. He's joining me here in the studio on the Peace and Social Justice Program. I also have via Zoom Cicerie Sherry, who's joining us. She's a local activist. On the other side of the break, we want to finish up with this discussion, the ruling that the federal judge had against the city of Chico, and look a little bit to the future. So just hang on. We'll be back in just a minute.
Hi, this is Megan from KZFR, production assistant.
And Ray Lager, underwriting director at KZFR.
Hey, Ray, you know what time it is?
Yes, it's time to vote in the Chico News and Review Best of Chico.
Well, that's right. CNR is happy to announce the return of Best of Chico. Voting is live at bestofchico.com, and you can vote for your favorite business, eatery, bands, and more.
That's right. And let's not forget, you can vote for your favorite radio station, KZFR, and our wonderful underwriters who help keep the Zephyr live and local.
Voting is simple. Just log in and get started.
For a complete list of KZFR underwriters, go to kzfr.org, click on the Underwriters tab, and you'll find logo links to all of our current supporters.
So tell your friends and vote for Best of Chico.
And don't forget, vote for your favorite community radio station, KZFR.
Welcome back to the Peace and Social Justice program right here on KZFR 90.1 FM here in beautiful Chico, California. I got to let you know that Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Cotton Party, offering contemporary women's clothing and accessories with an emphasis on natural fibers. Cotton Party has been providing friendly service for over 30 years in the heart of downtown Chico at 337 Broadway Street. Cotton Party is grateful for your business and offers complimentary gift wrapping with each purchase. More information by calling Cotton Party at 893-4923. And by Square Deal Mattress Factory, building the best night's sleep since 1920. Square Deal is celebrating over 100 years of making mattresses, bedding, furniture, and now face masks with the fabric of your choice right here in Chico. Square Deal is located at 1354 Humboldt Avenue. For more details, see squaredealmattress.com. Well, thank you to our underwriters for supporting community radio and specifically this particular program, the Peace and Social Justice program, heard on these very airwaves every Friday from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m., followed by Playing Dead at 1 to 3, and then 3 o'clock, Devastation Sound. So keep it locked into KZFR 90.1 FM, Chico. We're in conversation here with Patrick Newman of Chico Friends on the Street here in the studio, and I have via Zoom Cicery Sherry, who is also a local homeless activist here in Chico. We're talking about the recent ruling by a federal judge in support of the plaintiffs on behalf of the homeless here in Chico and against the sit-lie criminalization ordinances that were passed in 2015 by the city of Chico. I just want to go to this last thing that the judge says in the injunction. He says, given the likelihood of success on the merits, the plaintiffs have shown a likelihood of irreparable harm in the form of the potential violation of their constitutional rights. He does make it clear that the ordinances here in Chico that went through a city council with half liberal, half conservative are basically violating the Constitution. So what we're learning, hopefully one of the morals of this tale is that you cannot do whatever it is you want to do to clean up the city. You have to actually abide by this thing called the U.S. Constitution, which the last time I checked is a document that is often referred to by people on the right, the very same people for the most part who have implemented these ordinances, not without the complicity of the left. But the point is, if someone listening to the sound of my voice truly respects the Constitution and truly respects the right of Americans to exist in the public space, then you also should support the plaintiffs in this case in pointing out, as Judge England did, the unconstitutionality of the very laws that we in our beautiful little college town of Chico have passed to criminalize the most poor of those among us in the city. Lastly here, there's a little footnote that the Judge England has that says, as straightforward as this analysis plays out in application, the court understands the practical ramifications for the community are much more complex indeed, right? And so now I want to turn back to you, Patrick Newman and Cicery Sherry. So let's just play this out, that the bottom line is that the sit-lie ordinances, these criminalization laws, are taken off the books. Let's just say that happens either by decree or by mediation or in some way. Now we're left with a city with hundreds of unhoused people, still in the middle of a pandemic. Patrick, let me put this to you. This is a big problem, right? This is a gigantic problem. It's not going to be solved by a court. It's not going to be solved by a cabal of city council persons and business persons who join efforts and also social media groups to hate poverty people and get them out of the city. Those are never solutions. cursory look at the history of the demonization of poverty and the demonization of the most vulnerable among us, see that the trajectory of these kinds of criminalization laws is very ugly. Go online and look at some of the solutions that Robert Marbit has implemented around the country. And what you see is people being put into containment centers. So I don't care what your political stripe is. If putting citizens in containment centers doesn't get your hackles up, then I think you need to, you're not paying attention. Patrick, let me turn to you. What the hell do we do with this situation?
I don't think you're being hyperbolic at all. I think that the strength of the fabric of our democracy, the strength of our whether we have a moral compass or not, these things are they're going to be in evidence in how we respond to all this. This is a historical moment. It's like you can't avoid. I don't see a way around looking at this as a sort of a litmus test of how, you know, whether our democracy survives, whether we have the moral compass to make it survive. Because every time we have an authoritarian drift or, you know, end up with a fascist totalitarian state, there's always a scapegoated class of people. They're always stripped of their human rights and civil liberties. What are we immune from that? No, this is a moment that has a lot of implications for our future. I'm very fearful because when I look at this sort of extraordinary means by which we're being called to account, it doesn't, like I said, it doesn't fix the moral fabric of our city. It doesn't inform us necessarily about the human rights issues that go to the core of what's going on here. That takes work. That takes a bunch of citizens who want to do some soul searching and look more deeply at what kind of values are driving what we're seeing in Chico. So without that conversation, all we're doing here is tweaking things a little bit. We end up with, okay, so we decriminalize some of our laws. We end up with citations. Now we just use failure to appear warrants to get people into jail. We can play all these same games. We can keep depriving people. I'll just say one more thing on this whole thing. If I look at how, I mean, we've taxed our emotional and financial resources trying to do what we're doing downtown. At least I have, and I know Sisri has, and a bunch of other people who have been involved. I look at Comanche Creek. I look at the amount of uptake that I see from the so-called faith community in Chico and citizens in general and supporting that camp, making it work, the failure of the city of Chico to join in making it work. This is an absolute, I mean, right now, on-the-ground failure. If that's an indication of whether or not people of Chico stand with these people, then I'm going to say we haven't learned anything at all. And so we're really in trouble. And the only real solution to all this is, you know, Lloyd Pendleton's Housing First model. We're very far from doing that in this nation. So I'm concerned. I don't see that we're out of the woods at all. But anyway, that's
Patrick Newman of Chico Friends on the Street. Sisri, Sherry, what are your thoughts on that?
I'm really not sure what's going to happen moving forward. We're definitely at a point where we finally realize that we can't do nothing anymore. This is a watershed moment. It's a moral emergency. And we're going to have to collectively make that decision what side we're going to be on.
The other thing that we haven't even touched on, which, you know, plays no small role in this whole situation, is the vast inequities in wealth and resources in the country. I mean, this is, by all accounts, we're in the second gilded age, right? There's vast amounts of economic inequity. The last time I looked, the last article I saw, half of the people in the country, they would sink financially with a $700 emergency, right? So what is $700? I mean, how much is a new clutch on your car? So your car goes out and you basically have to go under financially. So this is in no small part a symptom of a systemic failure. When you have 500,000 people who have nowhere to sleep, who have, you know, nowhere to live, and you have a small amount of people with all the things, you know, this is not, the solution is not laws. This is like, you know, the game whack-a-mole. You know, you push it down there, it pops up there, you push it down. It's not going to go away until we do something about the inequities and we do something about the unjust financial and economic system in the country. But Patrick, I want to give you the last word.
Okay, the last word is I want Cicery to tell us, is there a way that people can contact you? And
The best way would be to look me up on Facebook. Just under Cicery Sherry. Send me a private message and we'll let you know how you can help. Or just show up. Fruit is very popular, and currently we only get fruit on Mondays. So if you wanted to show up on a Wednesday or Friday bringing fruit, that would be wonderful as well.
Fantastic. I'd love to opine with some more philosophical kinds of thoughts, but I'm really excited that Cicery's taken on this huge heroic task of trying to feed people in our downtown. So I'm hoping that it survives and thrives, and we can at least blunt some of the deprivation we've been talking about.
And Cicery Sherry, that's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings at 9 a.m. in the plaza.
Correct.
Breakfasts, which, again, for those who have been paying attention to social justice work over the past 60 years, providing breakfast has been an integral part of a lot of social justice movements, most notably, of course, the Black Panthers feeding the community in Oakland. That's a wonderful and noble thing you're doing, Cicery. We support you. The citizens need to come out and bring a banana. I don't know, bring a muffin, bring it, just show up there. Even with regard, Patrick, to your saying that it is a providence to bring stuff to the people. But the other thing that you're bringing, and you spoke about this earlier, is you're bringing some humanity, to those who have, through circumstances, have ended up living on the street, saying to people, you are human, you make a difference, you matter. And that's a big deal. That's, you know, the muffin is a kind of physical sustenance, but the interaction and the respect that goes, that can go a long way to have someone feel like they exist. Because I've talked to, and I'm sure you all have, I've talked to a number of folks who live on the street who feel that people look right through them, they look right past them, they ignore them, they don't even exist, they're invisible. So there is the class of people, the invisible class that we don't want to interact with. So I encourage people to find it in your hearts to come out and show up.
It's a vehicle. One more thing. If you're not on Facebook, feel free to contact us at chicofriendsonthestreet@gmail.com. That's another way to get more information. And
they can also go to chicofriendsonthestreet.org and find out about the mission, the details there. And okay, well, it looks like we've hit the end of the hour here. I'd like to thank Cicery Sherry, local activist. Thank you, Cicery, for coming on and talking about this really urgent issue. As you said, it's a moral emergency. Thank you for being on the show.
My pleasure.
And Patrick Newman, the founder of Chico Friends on the Street, again, doing heroic work here in the city, fighting the good fight. Thank you, Patrick, for coming into the studio.
Robert, thanks for having us on.
That wraps up the program for today. Stay tuned for Playing Dead, followed by Devastation Sounds. Have yourself a great weekend. Bye-bye.
We gotta fight the powers that be.
It's time for the KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar with me, Megan Hammer. The Paradise Family Summer Fest is holding a Friday night family movie. The original Willy Wonka movie, as well as free popcorn, all start at 8:30. This event is free and will be held at the Paradise Alliance Church, located at 6491 Clark Road in Paradise, on Friday, July 9th. July 10th, volunteers are needed for a cleanup day that will be held at the Nelson Sports Complex in Oroville, located at 2290 6th Street. The district-wide event is open for all of Butte County and hopes to see volunteers of all ages to help complete the project that will make a positive and lasting impact on the community. Volunteer tasks include painting, trash pickup, brush clearing, and removal of invasive plants. This event is from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. noon. If you have an event you'd like on the community calendar, let me know by sending us an email at cc@kzfr.org. This is the KZFR 90.1 FM community calendar.
All right, this is listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills and beyond, FM 90.1, KZFR, Chico. It's time for Playing Dead, and this is Bill. I'm doing Playing Dead this week. Got the Grateful Dead, recorded July 14th, 1984, at the Greek Theater in Berkeley. Played the July 13th show one time in the past, about 10 years ago or so. That's a dark star.